who else we got?
Now, filling in for Jerry Springer, Mark Maron on the radio.
All right, good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course you lurking conservatives. How is everybody this morning? I know some of you are in a time zone. You've already had most of your morning, but it's still pretty early here. I'm sitting here with my buddy Jim Earle. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Mark. I'm continuing to rock.
Oh, I can hear it in your voice. Rocking is what you're doing, Jim. I can hear it. I am overly rocked on coffee right now, and I'm pretty riled up, it seems, already. I cannot believe how excited are the Republicans now that they can reinvigorate the argument around gay marriage, and now the stem cell argument is reaching national proportions, and they could not be more relieved that the focus has been taken off the unwinnable and out-of-control situation in Iraq. Could not be more relieved. Now, I didn't want to get involved in this initially in terms of Rush Limbaugh's assault on Michael J. Fox. I'm not unlike a Republican and also not unlike Rush, who I don't listen to and I will only react to when he already makes the news, for a Republican pundit or ditto head, or the original ditto head, or the spokesperson to blame the victim. Granted, Michael J. Fox was making a political statement about his illness. Clearly, it seems now that the reason he was rocking so much, which was Rush's big problem, was that he was overly medicated, not because he went off his medication, which shows the ignorance that is at the core of Rush's pontificating. And also, he called Michael J. Fox shameless. Shameless. How can that guy, how can Rush Limbaugh accuse anybody about being shameless? Do you think that Rush Limbaugh gives a crap about stem cell research? Do you think he cares one bit? Do you think he even thinks about it? Do you think that if Rush Limbaugh were on his deathbed, that he wouldn't be having babies killed for their blood if it would keep him alive? Of course he would. He is a selfish, insanely megalomaniacal, talking points regurgitator for the Republican Party. It's only about power. That guy is no different than exploitive Christian leaders. These guys would, I swear to God, if it would save their lives, they would have babies killed and their blood drained to feed them. They are vampiric, megalomaniacal power freaks. Anyways, good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Yeah.
And Patricia Heaton, man. What is that? She plays the endearing, overbearing bitch on TV, and in real life, she is the right-wing, overbearing succubus on TV, saying that her primary concern, this is an interesting other right-wing approach to this thing, her primary concern is with stem cells. These things, they don't even know what they can do, but this is an important issue because there's a couple of issues at hand, is that if we get on board with this research, perhaps maybe we will start to represent ourselves in the world of scientific and medical progress again, that there's actual business interest at stake here in providing possible treatments for people that are very sick with diabetes, Parkinson's, but they don't know. You know why? Because we have medieval thinking religious fanatics in this country that want to stifle progress, that want to stifle science. These are not babies. These things are fertilized embryos at 3 days old inside of a dish. At 3 days, they can pull these stem cells out. And there's another technique where you can actually put your own DNA into one of these embryonic casings and create some stem cells from your own genetic material. Their big fear, I don't know, we'll get into that in a minute.
I don't know, Mark.
But Patricia Heaton, her big fear is that this will force poor people, poor women, to sell their eggs. As opposed to what? Clean her house? Wipe her baby's butt? What? What is that?
I kind of disagree with you on the stem cell thing, because I've been raising 4 stem cells for the last 30 years now.
And really?
Put them through college, named them, spent a lot of money on them, put a lot of financial resources into those stem cells, damn it, and I will not have you telling me that they are not my babies.
See? That's funny, but that is the intellectual progress the process that goes on in the mind. Because in my heart, I don't put a lot of thought into this on a day to day basis. I think that if the science is safe, that if the science is proactive, that if the science is not hurting anybody, and that's where the argument comes in, then I think it's probably decent science and that it could be designed to help people.
You know what science isn't safe? Like nuclear power.
Right.
Which the Republicans, you know, go all over. They love that, but no, they don't want you to experiment with stem cells.
Sure. This is the party that is filled with child predators, people that want to eliminate the middle class and force a lot of people in this country into poverty through their legislation. These are people that generally don't care about people unless they can find a wedge issue to misguide people that are too ignorant because of their religion or their lack of information to realize they're being screwed. I mean, it's clear to me that stem cell research should be done. But here's what I was going to say is that intellectually, if you think about it, this is a difference between heart and mind. The bottom line is, it is not a fetus. It is not anything but a collection of cells in an embryonic casing that probably wouldn't even come to term if it were brought up. A lot of these things, if it was nurtured, that happens out of the womb, which is a big threat to Catholicism, big threat to believers in the sense that if they can't frighten people into having sex in a certain way at a certain time, with certain restrictions, that's the big hinge on their ability to keep people believing.
There's nothing better than frightening sex.
That's for you. I think for some people, all sex is frightening, and it should only be done with a purpose.
That's the way Jesus wanted it.
Come on. But if you think about the possibilities, like we've done bits about it, and like you just said, that stem cell is going to have a name and braces and a drinking problem, that is one way to look at it. But if you look at it for what it is in the real world, in its real context, it is nothing more than a collection of possibilities. Who's to say that God did not give us the gift of science to say, well, look, you've been given this gift. You've figured it out. You have figured out the key to possibly helping people with these genetic possibilities. Sure, maybe it could be a baby, but it could also sustain the life of a diabetic. And on some level, I don't know why that doesn't make more Americans excited that if they find a cure for diabetes, you can keep eating like pigs and get as fat as you want. And that's something right up your alley, isn't it there, Jim?
Eating like pigs?
No, it's your basic criticism of Americans is that...
Well, damn right. We had the fat car
story yesterday,
but I want to talk about it more today because that's important. Yeah, I'm sorry, but there are overweight people out there in their SUVs or whatever they're driving around in, taking up 100 million gallons more a year? Or what was the figure?
Well, there's a lot of money involved in the people that, not just in SUVs, but you're talking about people who are overweight and putting more weight in the car, and it's getting them less gas mileage.
So slaughtering civilians in Iraq, so, Bubba doesn't have to walk two blocks to the Alpha Beta to get some waffles or a donut or...
Well, that's the thing now is that the Republicans are ecstatic. You got Rumsfeld coming out yesterday. You know what? Before we change, I don't want to change topics. I need to hear from some people. We're at 1-877-34-JERRY about this stem cell idea because maybe I'm insensitive. I try to be an empathetic person as much as I can in terms of understanding a religious mindset or understanding why this is bad. And the idea of cloning, this seems to be one of the hinges of the argument is that it's going to lead to cloning, that their big fear is cloning. But I guarantee you, if the shoe was on the other foot or some saying that fits in there, I don't know. I'm very bad at those things. I get them mixed up. Two is one apples.
Six and, of one. Half
yeah,
apples.
Whatever. Wait, yeah. But that's not the one I'm looking for.
Oh, okay.
If the shoe were on the other foot, I think that would make sense. If this were the Christians, let's say it's a different world, and we're going to talk about this, and I don't want to say Christians in a negative sense. If it were right-wing Christian fundamentalist fanatics, maybe 20 years from now, when Sam Brownback is the first theocratic president of the country, and they run everything, and all the liberals, the worst liberal scenario has taken place. They're all in work camps of some kind, and all that you have is a landscape dominated at all levels of government in every state by theocratic right wing Christians. They're going to have medicine, and I guarantee you. That by that time, I say inside 20 years, if that is the apocalyptic vision that I have in my head, is that medical science, they will be so proud to be cloning the first race of pure Christians that if it was in their control, Christian leaders would no doubt figure out a way to use this science as a means to create the great new Christian soldiers of the future. Believe me.
Jesus was a clone.
Come on, Jim.
Yes.
Where does that even come from?
A clone of God, of his father.
Uh-huh.
He's a clone. So, I mean, they're one and the same, aren't they, in aspects?
Okay.
None of this makes sense anyway, but, you know, that part, if you want to follow it liturgically, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, they're all clones of each other, right?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. You know, he was the first clone.
Uh-huh. You don't have much to go on this. I mean, I understand what you're saying. It sounds good.
They're one and the same, yet some people think that they're different. So all I'm saying is that religion is running our lives, and we are in that theocratic state already because they don't pay taxes. They don't pay taxes. Churches don't pay taxes. And yet, you know, you and I are funding this crapola in every one of our communities, every community that we live in. We fund the local church to do what they do, brainwash children or hold seances.
I have learned my lesson about broad strokes in terms of talking about religion. There is an entire faction right now within the evangelical community that is trying to do the right thing. I have talked to real Christians, that people who believe, and I'm talking about real Christians, who believe in certain elements of the teaching of Christ in terms of charity. Because when it comes right down to it, if you're a liberal or you're not a liberal, if you're a Christian or you're not a Christian, in order to understand and make this a better country, you have to really ask yourself, do I really care about poor people? And also you're going to have to ask yourself be honest, am I one of them? It's becoming very hard to tell. The only difference between the middle class and the poor at this point in time, in most cases, is credit. It's that is it. And they've got people convinced that they're not poor just by virtue that they can spend, you know, on their credit card, which ultimately is going to put them into hock and also put them into a big deal of trouble when they can't declare personal bankruptcy from overspending because of Republican legislation. But I'm digressing. 877-344 Jerry is the number. I'm Mark Maron. I'm in for Springer. It's 18 past the hour. Good morning. I'll talk to you in a second.
Keep the emails coming. Jerry@SpringerOnTheRadio.com. Jerry Springer.
Dancing with the stars.
And talking with you on the radio at 877-345-3779. 877-34-JERRY.
Springer on Air America Radio.
Hey, it's Mark Maron in for Jerry Springer. I'm here with Jim Earle. We are talking, reluctantly, I got to be honest with you, about stem cell research, about wedge issues, about these moral issues, or if you want to call it that, or how about distractions or a way to sucker and aggravate narrow-minded people into getting out and voting against their own self-interests. That's the way I see it. I think that the real issues are the Iraq war and the economy, and also the fact that most people in this country are just really a divorce or a sickness away from a type of bankruptcy that they will not be able to get out of, that bankruptcy courts are now just collection agencies for credit card companies, and that is because of Republican legislation. So if you're desperate and frightened and despairing and hence religious, you may be easily led by these moral issues, not unlike the gay marriage issues. Does it really matter to you that much? I understand that some people are uncomfortable with things, but being uncomfortable with things and then is one thing, and saying, well, look, I can engage in tolerance. I can tolerate certain things that may not be my lifestyle, as long as it isn't hurting me or it isn't compromising the way I live. And those are the real questions you got to ask yourself. And I know some people who are religiously inclined will not ask themselves that question. But what I don't understand is, if you're willing to say that stem cell research is against God's rules, and some of you are willing to say that instigating a war with Iraq or Iran or provoking Israel to attack Iran, to create as much chaos as possible in the Middle East, is something that should be worked towards, because without that, the second coming cannot occur. If you're willing to say that that's doing God's work, yet you're also willing to say in the same breath that stem cell research is not God's work, you got to be out of your mind. And who the hell are you to interpret it that way? Anyways, let's take a couple calls. Rich in Chicago, how are you?
Thanks. I just want to pick up on what you just said. The objection that many people have to stem cell research has to do with the fact that they're supposedly taking human lives. Yet they have no qualms about sending grown men and women to war to supposedly improve others' people's lives and get them killed. What's the difference?
You're absolutely right. There's a complete hypocrisy to it. And I believe, Rich, I believe that the extreme Christian right and politicians that are in office now use the unborn idea in roughly the same way the Nazis use the Aryan idea. They use it as a symbol, as hope for the future, as almost an unattainable project that represents the possibilities of the future. I think it's a complete propaganda, and I think it misleads people. Thanks for your call, Rich. Jim in Florence, Kentucky, how are you?
Doing great. How are you today, Mark?
Well, I'm pretty good, Jim. I'm just trying to understand some things. Can you bring a new angle on this to me?
Well, I think that many people in the Christian right who are opposed to stem cell have not had serious illness that have impacted themselves or loved ones.
That's right.
And once that type of situation happens, the moral viewpoint tends to evolve a little.
Sure it does. When survival and compassion and understanding and seeing someone you love in pain with a disease that could be possibly aided or cured with the progressive research, I got to think that changes your disposition.
Absolutely. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate your call. It is a way of claiming a moral high ground that I find to be sort of empty. And as I was saying before, Jim, that there are evangelical Christians. There are Christians that are starting to understand that perhaps they are being misled by their leaders. Perhaps their leaders are being misled by politicians, but ultimately they're running the same. They're jockeying for power. They're taking advantage of a lot of people that are perhaps sad or despairing or in a compromised economic state. As you were saying before, taxes pay for a lot of what churches do, and these faith-based initiatives, this money that was distributed amongst certain churches, has been proven to be done for political reasons, to deliver that congregation to the GOP, which is against the law. But I think that the real issue at stake here with these moral issues is that I think people are being misled. They are being taken away from what should be their real interests. And if you're Christian, charity and understanding that you are being screwed should be your primary interest.
It should be. I know you have a much more tolerant view of Christianity and religion in general than I do, but I do not believe Jesus was a very nice person.
Yeah, I understand that.
But all of Matthew in the Bible, you see he advocates child abuse and mass murder.
Well, if you're going to extrapolate, as people will, and I do think that there are tenets of Christianity that have helped people and have helped the culture at large, and I'm not going to disregard that, although I am an atheistic person bordering on spiritual agnostic, bordering on completely confused, but for the most part rational. I just think a lot of this is irrational. Maybe we can talk about gay marriage in just a few minutes. In terms of, you work with gay people, you understand them as people. Do you go home and say to yourself, those bastards should not be able to get married, those women should not be having kids?
Absolutely.
Are you that kind? Not you, I'm talking to the audience. Are you that kind of hypocrite? If you are, that's intolerance, and you're denying people their civil rights. Call us at 877-34-JERRY. It's Mark Maron in for Springer, 28 past the hour.
Jerry Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
Hey! Hey, you can join our conversation at 1-877-34-JERRY. That's 1-877-345-3779.
Bush told the spin doctor he wanted to fool you. Bush told the spin doctor, please make my lies sound true. 'Cause by himself, George sounds like he don't have a clue.
Let's see here. Well,
ineffective thinking.
Bin
Laden.
Ineffective. Let's see.
Bush told the spin doctor, make me sound like a king. The doc said,
open wide, George, let me pull the string. Just let me move your lips, George. You don't do a thing. Here we go.
Fear, threat, stay the course.
War, peace.
Freedom, freedom,
threat, threat.
War, peace.
Empty words.
War, peace.
Freedom, freedom,
threat, threat.
See the difference?
Kill,
force, danger.
Fear,
war, peace.
Terror,
threat, threat.
Good.
Fear,
peace.
Empty words.
War,
peace.
Danger,
danger,
threat, threat.
Just 'cause he's the president, don't think he's any smarter. He's just confused and really not insane.
Perhaps to,
don't call him a Kennedy, a Clinton, or a Carter. He's just a roving blip in Bush's brain.
Weapons of mass,
Bush told the spin doctor to tell him what to say. The doc said,
read this script, George, and look the other way. Just let me call the shots and I'll make your mouth obey. Once again.
Fear, threat, stay the course.
War, peace.
Freedom,
freedom,
threat, threat.
Good.
War, peace.
Empty words.
War, peace.
Freedom,
freedom,
threat, threat.
Why, George, you got it.
Well,
Jerry
Springer from the radio.
All right, Mark Maron in for Jerry Springer with my buddy Jim Earle. Talking about the wedge issues. Talking about stem cell research, talking about gay marriage a bit, talking about the fact that you are being bullied and coerced by millions of dollars worth of spin and advertising to probably vote against your own self-interest. You know what's going on in your gut, people. Most conservatives know what's going on in their gut. They realize that this Congress and that this administration is the most reckless, power-hungry, selfish administration to ever be involved in American politics. The least partisan, I watched a special on Barry Goldwater last night done by his granddaughter. I did not know a lot about Barry Goldwater. Barry Goldwater was the definitive conservative, and he was basically a libertarian in terms of his ideas of what social issues meant. Most of them are your own damn business. Most of them are your own damn choice. The Constitution is what should be protected, and your freedom and your civil rights. But that was an interesting thing with him, with the civil rights thing, that he actually voted against the Civil Rights Act because he thought it infringed on the Constitution, which was a big mistake. In the career of Barry Goldwater. But as a guy who would be probably considered, in most cases, liberal in his social beliefs, but very conservative in his political ideology, which is something you don't see now. And he was also a senator for 30 years who worked within the Senate with other senators in a bipartisan fashion to create a respect in that chamber, which is gone now because of these bastards. I'm a little worked up today, and the gay marriage thing gets me even more aggravated because this has no bearing on most people's lives except for the people that want to experience the protection of having a civic union or a marriage with somebody they love and they want to have a relationship with, and they want to have the tax protections and the benefits in death that any other married couple gets. And these are your neighbors. These are your coworkers. If you think they're sinners, then forgive them and let them live their life and let God deal with it. We don't need it in you to legislate that kind of stuff. It just seems ridiculous to me. Let's take a couple of calls. Ken in Cincinnati, how are you?
How are you, sir?
I'm okay, man. What's going on?
I'm outside. Can you hear me all right?
I can.
All right. What I was calling about is, look, I think in all of this gay rights, whether you're left or right on it, I think it's most disingenuous to African Americans to even have this conversation, be the centerpiece of our politics for this reason. They're both indirectly, at best, related to economics. And I mean, if you can find some money in there somewhere, I'd be surprised. And yet, African Americans, most impoverished, most undereducated, most under-resourced, are caught in the in the trenches between the right wing that really isn't interested in black causes and the left wing that requires our vote to win state and national campaigns. And yet this dialogue is all about gay rights stuff. And I think it's real. I think African Americans need to get to the point where we leave both of these parties, because it's disingenuous that gay rights issues dominate the discussion. We watched during 2004 and 2000, when black voters were disenfranchised and the black congressional caucus tried their damnedest to get white Democrats in the party to help out on Capitol Hill to get this before the public, and no one stood up while those black Democrats tried their best to watch out for the voter disenfranchisement that happened. We watched during years of police profiling and the crack versus cocaine debates, and not to mention the dismantling of affirmative action. And we watched this happen with little interest from the Democratic Party that requires our votes. And yet most of our conversation now is being defined by some stuff that really doesn't help people in the urban core.
I think that's I think you're absolutely right, Ken. And I think it's also interesting that the Republicans are using the gay rights issue to create some tension within black communities in terms of how the black communities feel about this issue.
Well, I disagree with that part. I'm a Christian. I'm a Democrat, but I don't believe in that gay rights stuff. I don't. And I'm okay with a party that has its differences there. But trust me, the Republicans didn't create that difference. We are very socially conservative. Don't make any mistake about that.
That's what I was saying.
But the Republicans didn't create that. They
right.
didn't create that.
That's just
and,
the way it
and
is.
Yet the Democrats, because we allow that to be the issue. In other words, you don't hear Democrats on Capitol Hill dealing with voter disenfranchisement like they should have in 2004. You
yes.
don't hear them talking about, but listen to all of our radio conversations about this issue. In other words, if the Democrats decided one day, listen, we're not going to let that define our politics, because if you look at the numbers, you're not going to win national campaigns based on the gay community. It ain't going to happen.
That's right. You're right. Thank you.
I
think you're absolutely right, Ken. I appreciate your call. I think what Ken is saying is absolutely true, that the Democrats have been a little cowardly in terms of addressing the voter fraud issue and in addressing how many African Americans were purged from the rolls and were stifled in their ability to vote quite intentionally by the Republican machine. Now, why they are afraid to do that, I don't know. We talked to Mark Crispin Miller yesterday. It is clear that this is a reality. Some Democrats are beginning to step up. Howard Dean has reacted to some of the machine problems in San Diego with the Busby race in terms of machines being brought home. But is anyone really dealing with how redistricting and the lack of machines and the disenfranchisement of African Americans? Are any Democrats really speaking up outside of African Americans, outside of John Conyers and some other representatives who are African American? No. And I think Ken has got a great point. And I hope that when and if, I have to add that because I don't want to get cocky, the Democrats take the House back, that this is in the first order of business. I think that to their credit, not to their credit, but we have to understand the situation the Democrats have been in. They have been powerless to do almost anything, but you would hope that they would at least speak up. And I completely agree with Ken that there's been a lack of that.
I have a big disclaimer on the last caller. I think he was totally trying to separate the gay rights from civil rights. And that's total BS, obviously. You know, I don't think any of us believe that.
No, I don't think they're mutually exclusive, but this is something that is a conversation within certainly the black socially conservative community, is that the addressing of this issue as a civil rights issue has caused some tension and some disagreement in that community. But the gay marriage issue and the gay marriage reality is definitely a civil rights issue. Whether the African American community thinks it is as important a civil rights issue as the civil rights issues that they have had to grow with, that's their business. But there is no question that the gay marriage issue is a civil rights issue, and it has to be addressed. And he said there's room for that. I'm not sure he said there's room for gay marriage. Clearly, he's against it.
Yeah.
But But the thing is, it doesn't affect his life per se, and we have to evolve as a country. We have to at least, you know, get up to speed with other democracies in the world that aren't stifled by this religious crap. It is 43 past the hour. We are going to run an interview after the break that Jim and I did on another show that we think is important and funny. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Jerry Springer.
He's a man of vision. He's a man of integrity.
On the radio. Your opinion expressed when calling Jerry at 877-345-3779 will be kept confidential.
All our calls are being monitored. Got that?
Oh, never mind. Jerry Springer on the radio.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
There's absolutely no question that our country has committed many grievous errors, if not criminal acts, in its short history as a democracy. Our next guest presents an argument that every successful republic must commit these kinds of mistakes if it is to evolve into a true democracy. And he lists 10 of the most important ones in his soon-to-be-published cover story for Harper's Magazine called A Democracy in Transition, How America Learned from Its 10 Greatest Mistakes. He's a very respected historian at Princeton University, and over the years has published many books on the American experiment, as he calls it. Welcome to the show, Professor William Chandler.
Thank you, Mark.
Now, in your article, you list 10 of the greatest mistakes made by our country. But what, just before we talk about them, what's your take on this? Can today's leaders really learn from mistakes of the past?
Oh yeah, man. Because if you learn, you know, and then you have that stuff right in your head, right? So you won't do it again, like the Indians.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. All right. Well, like Wounded Knee, for instance. I noticed that you didn't include that in your list. Did the American nation as a whole learn from that incident? Has it contributed to a greater enlightenment, if you will, of our culture in relation to the human condition of non-white colonized populations?
Oh yeah, sure.
Well,
what?
Wounded Knee.
Oh, yeah, I believe it contributed to a greater enlightenment, if you will, of our culture in relation to the human condition of non-white colonized populations. No-brainer there.
Yeah.
And when Wounded Knee happened, circa 1890, the American nation as a whole did learn from that incident, right?
Okay. Let's go through some of the mistakes in your list. There's the Civil War.
Yeah, that was bad for the country. Like it, you know, it shouldn't have happened for one thing, but it did. I don't know.
Uh huh.
Brother fighting against brother, blue and gray.
Right.
Goober peas.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that you listed the Korean War twice on the list.
What?
You listed the Korean War two times. It's mistake number four, and then later again, it's mistake number seven.
Oh, yeah, that was a mistake. You know, my proofreader didn't discover that until the last minute. Didn't have time to run another one. Maybe I should have put Wounded Knee in there or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. The Great Depression.
Yeah, that was another one I listed.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that was another example of the U.S. giving too much power to greedy industrialists so they can manipulate a flawed economic system to fill their own pockets.
Am I doing okay? I mean, how's this going so far?
Look, Professor William Chandler, author of A Democracy in Transition, How America Learned from Its 10 Greatest Mistakes, I noticed you didn't include Wounded Knee, but you did list the Battle of Little Bighorn. Can you explain that, please?
Well, sure, you know, they're both related to all bad things we did to the Indians that were wrong. Like, you know, well, you read the article, right?
Yes, I sure did.
Okay, well, then take Chief Sitting Bull, for instance.
Uh-huh.
Okay, see, that was wrong, what we did there to him, I mean. And by we, I of course mean the collective experience of the American psyche as deconstructed by the postmodern Dadaists.
Whoa. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm kind of slow here, but what the hell does that mean?
I don't know, man. Is this going okay so far or what?
Professor, please. You want to try this again when you're a little better prepared, sir?
Sure, Mark. Anytime in particular. I'm off all next week, you know, free.
I guess.
No, wait. That's last year's calendar. You know what my schedule is next week?
No, I don't. You know, goodbye, Professor William Chandler from Princeton.
Man, I suck.
All right. You know, sometimes...
Jerry Springer.
He is a genuine, patriotic American, and I'm really proud of everything that he has done.
On the radio. Hey. Jerry's talking to you.
You can talk back by calling 877-345-3779. That's 877-34-JERRY.
Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
All right, it's Mark Maron in for Jerry Springer, having a big conversation about religion. That's going to continue, actually, and I know it makes some people uncomfortable, but I think it's important. Chris Hedges, the author of War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning and Losing Moses on the Freeway, the Ten Commandments in America, will be with us in the next hour to talk specifically about the dangers of religion in democracy when it gets too powerful. Also later in the show, Ariel Levy is going to be on. She's the author of Female Chauvinist Pigs, Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture. Looking forward to that conversation. There's also a rumor that President Bush is doing a radio junket today and reaching out to some conservative and liberal talk radio outlets, and we may get 2 minutes with the president. I don't know. Right now, I want to get a minute or two here that we have left in this hour with Loretta in Round Lake, Illinois. Loretta, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to bring up one point, another point of hypocrisy in this whole embryonic stem cell research issue with the Christian right. They're so opposed to this because they think it's life, mm-hmm. and yet these are created in fertility clinics by people who pay a lot of money to have a lot of embryos made so that they can have children.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they not protesting at these fertility clinics, saying they're creating lives and they're not following through?
Yeah, why don't they get on the? Yeah, that is exactly right, because a lot of these things will die, or they'll be thrown away, die in the sense not as a human but as a cell. That's a very good point, and I appreciate your call, Loretta. Yeah, why do they select their protests so specifically that it fits into political dialogues? Who's in charge of that?
That's right. I mean, people should be protesting outside your house every time you masturbate. That's wasted life.
Well, I got a weird neighbor that does that, actually, and it's made me uncomfortable for months. But I figure, you know, as long as he's not on my property, I guess he's got a right to do it if he's not too loud. All right, we got a big show, a lot of more show coming up. Chris Hedges, Ariel Levy, perhaps the president. How great would that be? Stay with us here on the Springer Show.
Jerry Springer, Mark Maron on the radio.
All right, good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Of course, you lurking conservatives, welcome aboard. I am Mark Maron. I am filling in for Springer for today and yesterday, but that day's behind us. I imagine you could find a podcast of it somewhere. Got Jim Earle with me.
Hello, people. Right now it's 55 degrees in Los Angeles.
Inimitable. The inimitable, is that a word? Does that mean I cannot imitate you,
it's
Jim Earle?
Absolutely right, Mark. You cannot.
You're right, and I bet you were excited about the news today that the pigs have been pooping on our spinach.
I think that that vindicates. Is that another word that I'm using properly? For those of you who don't know,
better pigs than people.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. But
right.
For those of you who don't know, my buddy Jim is a very strict vegetarian. Does not eat any meat or meat products. Do you even play with balls that are leather?
Excuse me? What? Come again?
How's that? Do you have a vegan softball, is what I'm saying? Do you have a vegan?
No, I don't go that far. I don't believe in the whole, hey, well, you're a vegetarian, then why do you
have shoes?
Well, because I don't eat my shoes every day, you moron, okay? It's a big difference, but no, I.
You don't fit the profile of a stinky hippie vegetarian. You don't.
No, but I am stinky.
Yeah, and I got no problem with that. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to slander the hippies of that. But you spend a little time in college and in San Francisco. And,
oh yeah, Berkeley.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, but no, there's. I think what I don't mean to name call, but there's a pretension to vegetarianism, and you don't seem to have it. You're fairly practical. Your vegetarianism is founded in environmental issues and also just by the fact that pigs poop on spinach, and they shouldn't be pooping on spinach. So this is probably a conundrum for you, isn't it? What is safe, Jim? If you can't eat spinach because you can't be protected from wild pigs breaking into the spinach patch and pooping their E. coli poop on the spinach.
The only reason, you know, we get E. coli from vegetables is because of meat production.
That's right.
Meat eaters.
These farms are owned sometimes by the same farmers that own the cattle farms, and they are too close.
Meat is killing this world. Meat is cutting down the rainforests, taking 80% of the water in California goes to making meat.
Meat and guns, I think. Guns are bad, too. Drugs,
the pesticides
also.
For making meat, polluting the underwater aquifers and the streams
abuse,
and everything else. And
cars.
Alcohol abuse.
Yeah, cars.
What?
Cars, too. I'm sorry, I'm just adding to the list as you ramble on.
Pornography.
Is that, well, we're going to talk
meat
to.
Meat eating is, yeah.
R.L. Levy, I'm looking forward to that conversation in a little while. We've got a couple of good conversations ahead of us. Chris Hedges is one of my favorite writers. He's one of my favorite thinkers. He is an interesting guy. He was going to be a minister. His father was a minister. He was at Harvard Divinity, I believe, Harvard Divinity School, to be a minister. Began his process of being a minister in the inner city, I think, in Boston, and decided that in a change of life, he became a war journalist. And it's a profound change of life, and he wrote a book called War is a Force, It Gives Us Meaning, that is an incredible meditation on war. And then he wrote another book recently called Losing Moses on the Freeway, The Ten Commandments in America, which is a series of religious meditations or religious-themed meditations on the modern world. He's just and also he was the Mideast bureau chief for the New York Times for like 6 years. Just an amazing career, and he has recently become somewhat obsessed with the fanatical Christian right in terms of their political modus operandi, what they really want, their manifest destiny to take over this country has become a real point of contention with him, and he's writing a book on that, and we'll talk to him about that. And later in the show, we have Ariel Levy, who has written a book called Female Chauvinist Pigs, Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture. Now, this is something I've always thought about, is there's an incredible proliferation of pornography and stripperdom in this country. It is encouraged.
Yeah.
It is not condescended in a way. It is not. There is no real movement in the religious community that I can see against it publicly. Why is that? It can't just be about money. It's got to be about something else. I've got some theories. You want to hear one of my theories?
Sure, go ahead.
And this is the surveillance theory. This is the future of what I call rat culture. What I believe, and I'm going to talk about this, I've talked about this before, is obviously with the Patriot Act and with the lack of constitutional guidance that this administration chooses to have, they can look at our hard drives. They can tap our phones without a warrant. They can do it to anybody. And people who defend this policy in the name of national security say, hey, look, buddy, if you got nothing to hide, you got nothing to worry about. And I got to be honest with you, Jim, I don't have anything to hide, but I've got a few things I'm ashamed of. And in some cases, I'd rather be caught with a bomb because I could explain what I was going to do with a bomb. But if someone were to download the stuff on my hard drive, I would have to say, hey, I didn't know it was a guy at first. And you know, then I just kept looking at it because it was weird. I'm sorry. Am I in trouble? What do you want me to do? And I think that is how they're going to use porn. I think the idea of enemy combatant and how that is defined loosely now as anybody who could have any affiliation and even a 6 degrees of separation from what can be seen as a terrorist can be accused of being an enemy combatant. Now, if this law stays on the books, who the hell is to say how they're going to use this surveillance tool of power? How are they going to use that? What if they use it like that? What if? Because I believe, and I've said this before, about something like Abu Ghraib. The reason why there were thousands of pictures of Iraqis being tortured and have women's underwear on their head and dogs at their genitals was that was a concerted effort by the CIA to create a culture of rats. In terms of they couldn't get any intelligence on the ground, so what they wanted to do was blackmail Iraqi men into doing their bidding and being their rats within the culture by saying, look, if you don't do this, we're going to show your family these pictures. All right, can you live with that? This is the one with the underwear on your head. So that was the attempt that I believe failed. But I think that surveillance culture is how they're going to recruit for the army. That's how they're going to get people to do their bidding. The CIA has been doing it for years, that if you get a call that from an army recruiter saying, hey, we're checking out your cookies, and it looks to me that you've got some pretty peculiar sexual tastes, and I would sure hate for your mom to find out about this or for your wife to find out about this. I was wondering how you'd feel about joining the army. I believe they're going to use this to bully people. I also believe they're going to use debt to bully people into joining the armed forces, because how else are they going to get people to join when the war is not something that people can engage in on a national level as something that is necessary?
That is true, absolutely.
It's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Do you think
I agree with the debt more than I do the sexual thing.
Right.
What if you blackmail someone? Hey, I'm gonna show these pictures to your wife and your mom.
Yeah.
Suppose your wife and your mom are in on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Then you got nothing to be ashamed of.
But
how you get out of this whole thing.
That's a special case. I think most people are ashamed. I think that's one of the reasons why religious fanaticism has taken root so deeply in this country. I think a lot of people who come to religion later in life have a lot outside of just belief. And I keep hitting this, and I know this is one of those
religion things
that pisses people off. That I have nothing. I understand the need for belief. I understand the need for having to be in awe of something greater than you, something bigger than you, a power greater than yourself, in recovery speak, a God. And I also understand that the idea of God's will was to protect and to benefit the culture of life in terms of how we live our lives, not to be extrapolated from and interpreted in the worst ways to consolidate power. But that's my own opinion. I seem to be digressing a little bit. I wanted to talk – how'd this start? We were talking about spinach and the problems with spinach and farming. And look where we are.
Spinach and Jesus.
I've got to confess.
Jesus never ate spinach.
I sure he did. He didn't.
He never married either.
That
he hung around with men all his life.
So Popeye is sort of a Jesus figure.
I could worship that.
You could worship Popeye?
I am what I am.
Well, that's very spiritual. But is it spiritual or more philosophical? I think it's more philosophical. We're digressing here. I killed a possum the other night, and I feel awful about it. Awful.
Are you that desperate for meat?
No, I didn't kill him for meat. It was horrible, and it made
me... Why'd you kill a possum?
I didn't do it on purpose. This possum would show up occasionally and eat banana peels out of my garbage in the back, and I kind of liked the possum. And the other night, I'm pulling out of my driveway, and I look, as I'm pulling out, I see in my driveway the possum scurrying up the road, up the driveway. And I didn't know what happened. And I didn't feel a bump, and if I would have rolled over it, it certainly would have squished and died pretty immediately. But this possum was going through what looked to be death throes in my driveway, and possums are weird. They're like alcoholics. You shouldn't see them in the light. I felt awful because I didn't know. See, I know that.
So did you put him out of his misery?
Well, no, I didn't know because
like
I know.
Granny looking for vittles?
No, I know that possums play dead. I just didn't know whether or not they actually performed the death throes. So I didn't want to interrupt what could have been a theatrical performance by an animal in shock who's known for playing dead.
Right.
So but I was horrendously upset, on the verge of tears over a possum, which made me connect with something in myself that I
yeah, there was something else you're connecting with.
I'm very
You were very close to a star-nosed mole once.
No, it's animals. I feel bad. I felt bad, but I had to leave, and I left, and I was hoping that he was playing possum. I came back, and he was still dead, and he remained dead through the next morning. And I'm over it a little bit. I think he was an old possum. He had a good life, but I still felt awful about it. But what's interesting that I learned there is that any sort of death, any sort of even if it's a bird or a cat, not so much bugs, but when you see an animal in pain, the waves that ripples through your reality it was profound to me, and it's a very painful experience. I know it is just the law of the wild on some level, but just the lack of that in my life, I feel grateful for, and it made me really feel a tremendous amount of empathy for anybody involved what am I trying to say exactly? Death is bad when it happens accidentally.
You can never be a serial killer.
And animals in pain was very disturbing. That kind of went nowhere, but I felt awful about it. And they were supposed to come pick the thing up. And I feel like I'm being a baby. My wife was like, we'll deal with it tomorrow. I'll help you with it. Like I was being some sort of wuss in terms of dealing with the dead possum. But I got up early, Jim, and I did my manly duty. I went out there, and I picked that possum up with a shovel, and I put it in a garbage bag with my own damn self. And I walked into my wife, and I said, honey, I took care of the dead possum. You don't have to worry your pretty little head about it.
And next door, some kid's going, where's Herbie?
Oh, no, they're not pets.
Herbie's gone.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, look, I just got word from my producer in my head that we are going to be part of this this press junket, I think, with President Bush on the phone for a couple of minutes. So stay here for that. And also Chris Hedges to talk about Christian fascism a few minutes after that. It is 18 past the hour. It's Mark Maron in for Springer.
Email Jerry at SpringerOnTheRadio.com. It's worth it. Keep trying. 877-345-3779 is 877-34-JERRY. Springer on the radio.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Folks, in a massive attempt to reach out to all Americans, President Bush is doing what they call a radio junket. He will sit at a desk in his Oval Office and do short radio interviews one after the other all over the country, and we are on that list. Apparently, in just a matter of moments, we will have the President of the United States on the phone. He apparently chose the Springer Show because he saw that as an audience that he would like to talk to. Mr. President, are you with us?
I'm here.
Hello. President Bush, I thank you for being on the show.
I appreciate that, Mr. Springer.
I'm Mark Maron. I'm filling in for Jerry, Mr. President.
Well, that's six of one, half a dozen of two.
Okay, well,
it's the same thing.
Okay. Look, I have some questions. It looks like you got to be running a little scared right now. The Democrats are closing in on the House of Representatives. Are you feeling any fear?
Well, not only do I feel my fear, I see it because I know it's out there. When I get afraid, I don't let myself get feared.
Uh-huh.
When I get afraid of something, I attack back.
Uh-huh. So now you're out campaigning. There's also some Senate races. I think it looks like some important Senate races, certainly in Ohio between Brown and DeWine. It looks like the Democrats are closing in there.
Well, the Democrats are closing in. They have a funny way of doing that because elections is free.
Uh-huh.
I may not support Democrats, and I may be doing everything I can to fight them and hunt them down.
Uh-huh.
But they're still out there competing in free competition.
You mean in the? I'm not understanding. In free competition like campaigning.
You got it there, Jerry. I'm talking about folks who are electing their elections.
Okay,
as much as I disagree with that, I understand how important it is to disagree to disagree.
Okay. Now, Al Lieberman, do you think, or Joe Lieberman? I'm sorry, Joe Lieberman. Do you think he? I just had a little of Bushitis there. Joe Lieberman, do you think he will become a Republican?
I appreciate that. You know, Joe Lieberman is one of my courageous partners and one of my co-allies against the war on terror. I think he goes a long way to prove that sometimes a Democrat can be just as good as a Republican in almost every way.
Uh-huh.
And I would encourage all the criticizers out there to look to Joe Lieberman as an example of a kind of Democrat who knows how to get along.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now the situation in Iraq. Now Rumsfeld, your buddy Donald Rumsfeld came out yesterday saying, just lay off. This is going to take some time. Most people can see that it's a disaster. How do you see the war in Iraq is going right now, Mr. President?
Well, I understand that there's folks out there that says maybe we've made some mistake.
Uh-huh.
I know that. I'm not stupid.
Yeah.
But my answer to those people out there is that we couldn't afford to have the threat of a shape to come in the form of a mushroom stool.
Right. I kind of get the gist of what you're saying. So you're saying something that perhaps there might be an atomic blast, right? You're saying that there's an atomic threat.
No, I don't know anything about that. I think the threat is nuclear.
It's right, nuclear, of course. I'm trying to stop this sound. I just heard a sound come out of my bag here, Mr. President. Now, let's talk about national security a little bit.
Jerry, if you have sounds coming out of your bags, we're going to have to smoke you out and ask you some questions.
Well, it wasn't a dangerous sound. I believe it was a cell phone, I'm sorry to say. But
have you ever been down to Cuba?
No, I have not. I've not been down to Cuba. My name's Mark. I'm filling in for Jerry. Mark.
Well, Mark, I'd have you know it's a mighty good weather down there this time of year. I'd like to ask you some questions, maybe.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's stay on that. National security, they're taking our shampoo away. I mean, are we any safer? It seems to me that we're not. I think that, honestly, if I can be candid with you, Mr. President, that your administration has made this world less safe. Am I wrong?
Well, you are wrong, but I'd appreciate if you don't get candid with me.
Okay.
I don't do that.
Okay, I apologize.
I don't support the Homo American agenda.
Uh-huh. I know. I understand. But in national security, do you think we're safer, sir?
I do. I think we're safer because we're every day out there, men and women and other folk from every stripe and color,
yeah,
are able to get together and go about their businesses. And I don't think that's ever been able to happen.
Yeah, well, it was interesting talking to you, Mr. President. I appreciate you taking the time. I think that you've made a very wonderful impression on the liberal community with our interview, and you have a good day, sir.
I appreciate that, Mark. God bless the United States of America.
Yes, God bless you too, sir. Wow, that's always interesting.
That was remarkable.
Yeah, I can't believe, I'm one of those guys that my cell phone just went off. I don't even know if you heard it on the air. Folks, we have Christopher Hedges. Chris Hedges, in just a few minutes, is going to talk to us about the real threat to our government. And it's from the inside, and it resembles a political movement that was popular in the 30s. And it could be coming from the religious factions that might be your neighbors. So stay tuned for that. Chris Hedges on American Fascism, the Christian Right, and the War on America. We'll be back in a second. It's Marin on Springer.
Jerry
Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
You can join our conversation at 1-877-34-JERRY. That's 1-877-345-3779.
Buenos dias. Buenos dias. In American, that means, hey, what's up, dog? Thank you now for downloading this newest chapter of our special audio course, Your Speaking American Now, Dude, taught by Laura Bush.
Bueno de care, muchachos and muchachitas. Today's English word is really important if you want to stay out of trouble here in America. Our word today is condom. Say it with me, condom. Now, I'm not talking about a condominium, those things you guys build in Miami for those nice Jew boy families. And I don't mean condiment, those little packets y'all steal from your job at the Jack in the Box. No, a condom is that a thing you put on that thing when you're doing the dedo. Because if you don't, the next morning a woman could be carrying a little human life inside her. A human life with all the God-given rights that we might let you have someday. So remember, when you're feeling all kind of Vita Loca with your honey, one of you's got to make sure to whip out the... before you whip out anything else. I mean, hey, ladies, if you keep popping out those Bambinos, how are you ever going to find time to take care of our kids, the real American ones? Oh, by the way, today's word is our little secret. One we got to keep quiet for my hubby, you know, Jorge. So, like, don't ever mention that you heard me talking about it, especially if you're on the phone. Okay, next time our subject will be gardening. I think so, anyway. My list here says we'll have words like grass, weed, grow light, and buds. Oh, so I guess we'll talk a little bit about beer then, too. So till our next English lesson, this is Laura Bush saying, Pasa la blunta. Remember, you're speaking American now, dude.
Remember, learning English gets you closer to finally living in America legally. So thank you for downloading this unauthorized copy of You're Speaking American Now, Dude, from Stinking Badge Productions, in association with Springer on the Radio.
Jerry.
Springer on the Radio.
All right. How are you? Mark Maron here in for Springer. Jim Earl is with me, our guest. I'm very excited about this. I haven't talked to him in a while. Chris Hedges is a lot of things, my friends. He is a journalist, an author. He is the son of a minister. He was on his way to a life in the clergy and chose to cover wars as a journalist instead. He was the New York Times Mideast bureau chief. He's always been a critic of the Bush administration's move into Iraq, yet he is not some kind of peace activist. His books, War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, and Losing Moses on the Freeway, The Ten Commandments in America, are profound personal meditations on the subjects of war and religion. He's also highly critical of the Christian right and what seems like a movement to take over the country, which is what his upcoming book, American Fascism, the Christian Right, and the War on America is about. He's on the phone with us now. Great to talk to you again, Chris Hedges. Oh, that sounds great. The connection's good, too. So I want to talk about first about the word fascism, because a lot of people throw it around. And a lot of people don't know what it means, but clearly it has a specific meaning that can be applied to the subject of your book. How would you define it?
I think there are many points that go into making a fascist movement, that alliance with corporate interests, that defanging of labor unions, the cult of masculinity, that final aesthetic being violence itself. In the Christian right, we see it with this obsession with apocalyptic violence, secrecy, the constant manufacturing of fear, the crushing of any kind of dissent, the belief that there is only one legitimate way to be in a country. In this case, it would be their very narrow and, I think, distorted view of what it means to be a Christian, and that there is no other legitimate way. There are no other legitimate voices. These begin to create what I would consider a fascist movement. It's not a word, by the way, that I use lightly. I spent a lot of time sitting down with scholars like Robert O. Paxton, who wrote The Anatomy of Fascism, or Fritz yeah. Stern in his great book, The Politics of Cultural Despair, because it is incendiary. But I finally believe, I look at this movement, especially as somebody who comes out of the church, as a mass movement. Its goal is political power and the destruction of our open society, and I don't think the word is too strong.
Now, we should talk about this, because you are someone who understands Christian values. You are somebody that was almost on a career to teach those values or preach them anyways. Now, we're not suggesting here that all Christians are theocratic whack jobs, but some, I believe, in what you're saying, and certainly when you see like David Kuo's book, in terms of how the power elites or how the cabals of power treat these Christians and even their own leaders, it has become very clear to me, and I imagine to you, that religious right leaders are really all about power and misleading thousands and thousands of their followers to gain that power. And how do you deal with assessing those congregations? Do you have sympathy for people that are misled like this? Is there something we can say to them?
Very much so. I mean, these are not bad people. I think we have to, I mean, for me, the starting point of this movement is the disenfranchisement of tens of millions of Americans in this country, mm-hmm. Many of whom come from my own family. Those people who were members of the working class, who once upon a time could get decent, fairly well-paying jobs in the manufacturing sector, all of that's gone. We have obliterated their community, not only in an economic sense, but in a physical sense. When you go to the Rust Belt, when you go to the mill towns in Maine, where my family is from, there's sure. nothing left. And you can't disenfranchise, dislocate, banish tens of millions of Americans from the possibility of a decent life, of hope, of a dignity, and and not expect psychological and political distortions of a tremendous kind. So I think it's not accidental that the most powerful rates of growth for this movement come from places like Ohio, these former manufacturing centers where people have been completely dispossessed, or the exurbs, you know, places like Orange County, where there is a community again has been obliterated, not so much in an economic sense, but in a physical sense. You know, there are no community rituals, no community centers, no places even to walk often. There are no sidewalks.
So they are building. So what you're saying is that the mega churches that are being built, some of which don't even really include the ideas or the mention of Christ in their sermons, in their preaching, are really they're building towns. They're building towns with schools, child care, and leadership.
Yes, and I think that this is a movement that comes out of despair, either personal or economic. Because what happens is these people, and we bear as a society tremendous responsibility for what's been done, this kind of Weimarization of the American working class. And these people are so desperate that they are lured into essentially a non-reality-based universe. And remember that this is a movement that believes in magic. It believes that Jesus has a plan for us, that there are daily miracles in our lives. That when you understand that this is that despair has thrust people into a non-reality-based universe, you begin to understand the movement. And I
Mystical
think so often
thinking.
Us. Yeah, and so often, you know, the response on many of us is, well, we can just talk to them rationally. We can speak to them. They are terrified of going back into that despair.
All right. Chris Hedges, stay with us 1 second. We've got to take a quick break. If you want to, do you mind if I get some callers?
No, please.
All right, 877-34-JERRY. Our guest is Chris Hedges. We're talking about the religious rights, basic plan and momentum to take over the country and rebuild it in a theocratic sense in what they believe is a Christian way. We will be back in a second. Again, the number 877-34-JERRY. If you have questions for Chris, 41 Pass Marin in for Springer.
It's not going to end the war.
It's certainly not going to end the violence.
Jerry Springer on the radio.
But it's going to help a lot.
Call us now.
877-345-3779.
877-34-JERRY.
Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
Our Mark Maron here in for Springer. I'm here with Jim Earle on the phone, one of my favorite thinkers, Chris Hedges. The upcoming book, American Fascism, the Christian Right and the War on America. You can also read Chris's other books, War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning and Losing Moses on the Freeway, The Ten Commandments in America. He frequently writes on truthdig.org. I believe it's a .org, right, Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we're talking about the maintaining the delusional, ecstatic, magical state that you're saying that the communities of these despairing Americans are sort of led into by Christian leaders who have nothing but power on their mind. How do we shake that out? How do we break that up?
I think two ways. First of all, we have to understand the movement we're dealing with. These people who, let's call them Christian Reconstructionists, Christian Dominionists, this radical movement within the Christian right constitutes a tiny percentage, probably less than 7%. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly. But they control the levers of power. They control all of the Christian broadcasting, radio and television. They have taken over denominations like the Southern Baptist Convention, purging, oftentimes purging people who agree with them on social issues that abortion is murder and homosexuality is evil, et cetera, but they don't buy into this political agenda. I mean, within the Southern Baptist Convention, there was a long tradition of traditional pious Christian conservatism coupled with a kind of belief that the church was on the side of the working class. That's all gone now. The church, in the hands of these people, is on the side of the American oligarchy. So I think first understanding them and realizing that this is a movement which we cannot compromise with. And second of all, I think ultimately we have to look at the roots, the root causes behind this fanaticism and sympathy for this fanaticism, and that is the huge distortion that has crept into our country, the creation of an oligarchic class. You know, what's the pay ratio of the average CEO in the United States? 417
right.
to 1 or something ridiculous
right.
like that. The fact that, you know, there are whole sections of America that are beginning to look like the third world, that, you know, social services, including public education, has collapsed, that if you are part of the elite, you live well. And of course, now even the middle class is under assault. I mean, we're not only going to find that jobs, manufacturing jobs, are being outsourced, have been outsourced, but anything that can go on software can be outsourced. I mean, architects. I mean, we're distorting our own country to such an extent that political and psychological distortions follow.
Right.
And I think that
fertile ground. Fertile
exactly,
ground.
Exactly. Yeah. Of course. We have created it. We have
right.
created this.
Let me
and
take
I,
a...
And,
go ahead,
I blame
go ahead.
The Clinton administration for this, too. I mean, they were the people who brought us NAFTA. They ended welfare. You know, the Democratic Party is not immune. They're not our great last hope.
Right. Let's take a call and maybe answer the question of the caller on the other side of the break. Who do I got Andrew in Springfield, Massachusetts. Andrew?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. What's your question for Chris?
Well, here's my issue. I was just listening to what you guys said before the commercial break. About magic, how these people believe in magic and whatnot. And I got to tell you, I'm a Christian, and, you know, I'm a liberal Democrat, and I was a little taken aback by what he said, because, you know, I mean, all Christians believe in miracles, and so I was just hoping you don't, you know, sum us all up into this tiny section of the population who's radical who gets used by the Republican Party.
Okay,
you know what
let's
I mean?
let Chris address that. Thanks for your call, Chris.
Sure.
Well, you know, first of all, I define myself as a Christian, although I'm not born again, and, you know, I believe in gay rights and gay marriage, all that kind of stuff. But I certainly grew up in the church, graduated from seminary. My faith is extremely important to me. Do I believe in magic? Do I believe that there's a preordained plan for me? I can't believe that. I mean, I lived through the war in Sarajevo. I was in Sarajevo during the siege as the Balkan bureau chief for the New York Times. I watched, over the course of that war, 4,000 children just in the city alone killed. Did God have a divine plan for me, or did I have an armored car? I think that oftentimes when we live in these zones of affluence, such as these industrialized nations, zones of a tremendous privilege and luxury, it's easy to begin to think that we have this luxury and this wealth because somehow we're blessed and that we deserve to have it. And I think that's very dangerous.
It's cultural narcissism, really.
It's cultural narcissism, and it really blames the poor. And the dispossessed. I mean, half of this planet lives on less than $2 a day for their own misery. I think that having spent almost 20 years of my life in the developing world, that misery comes from a raw and brutal, often American imperialism that imposes it, whether in Central America, whether in Angola, whether in the Middle East at the moment. I, for one, find that belief system catering to a very dangerous and pernicious worldview that begins to slip very closely into racism.
Well, listen, Chris, let's hang around for one more break, and we'll try and tie us a couple loose ends on the other side of this. We're not going to have a lot of time, but I certainly appreciate talking to you. Will you hang out for a minute?
Yeah.
Okay, great. We're talking to Chris Hedges. We will be back with him in just a second. It's 50 past Mark Maron in for Springer.
Less of you means more of Jerry. So call now, please. 877-345-3779 is 877-34-JERRY. Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
Hi, it's Mark Maron in for Springer. I'm here with Jim Earle. On the phone is Chris Hedges. The book we are talking about and from, I believe, is American Fascism, the Christian Right and the War on America. When is that out, Chris?
January.
I couldn't be more excited. It's just been great talking to you, and I hate to do this, but we've only got a few minutes, and I want to talk about the idea of apocalypse, about the apocalyptic myth, that the way some of the leaders of the Christian right really suspend the fear is that they guarantee the end of the world. They present it as something they're hoping for because it will deliver them, but is it something they are really working towards?
Yes, because it caters to this theology of despair, this belief that there's nothing worth saving in the world, this kind of weird spiritual Darwinism, which again gets back to what we talked about earlier, a belief in magic, a belief, you know, that the world will be destroyed and good Christians.
Don't you think their leaders, though, are hedging their bets that it won't happen so they can remain in control? I mean, do they really want that to happen?
I think that everything they do, I mean, for instance, if you look at their policies towards the Middle East, they blindly support anything Israel does, even when, as somebody who comes out of the Middle East, it's not in Israel's interest to polarize the Palestinians, increase the repression, and make any kind of an agreement impossible, you know, to cheer on, for instance, a war with Iran. I think oftentimes these people are not particularly sophisticated. I'm talking about the leadership in terms of their worldview. I mean, including our president. These are people who've never traveled abroad. They don't speak other languages. They don't know other cultures. They see the entire world through the prism of their own sort of demented Christian nationalism, and they see other people as just a reflection of themselves. And I think, you know, Hofstadter in the Politics of American Paranoia, or I forget the exact title, wrote about how when you want to look at these extreme movements and find out what they're about, look at what they accuse the others of. And I think just as if you look at the rhetoric that they use towards radical Islam, you get a pretty good insight into what they feel. These are people who only know how to speak the language of violence. And especially at a time when we have weapons of apocalyptic proportions, this language is exceedingly dangerous for us all.
Well, Chris Hedges, always amazing to talk to you. I hope you're well. You know, I wish we could hang out for a little longer. Maybe when I come to New York sometime, we'll talk some more. But I'm looking forward to the book, and thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Mark.
You bet. American Fascism, the Christian Right, and the War on America, out in January. But please do yourself a favor. Do a little primer of Hedges' work. War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning is a beautiful book. So is Losing Moses on the Freeway. In the next hour, Ariel Levy, we're going to talk about the new feminism and how it relates to porn and raunch culture and what it means to women to be in that culture and looked at in those ways. So stay with us for that. It's Mark Maron for Springer coming up on the top of the hour.
This is Springer on.
All right, stand by, everybody. And roll music. And go. Take it away. Hello? Is he in there? Huh. You know what? I don't think Jerry's coming. Who else we got?
Now, filling in for Jerry Springer, Mark Maron on the radio.
All right, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and you lurking conservatives, here we go into the final hour of today's Springer Show. I am the guest host. I am Mark Maron. That is Jim Earl.
Hello.
We've been talking a lot about wedge issues, about religion, about Christian fascism. You know, it's a really interesting thing to me that Chris Hedges brings up is just in reflecting on what he said. You know, what is really more of a threat to this country? Narrow-minded ideologues who want to make everybody act like them and disregard democracy completely, or gay and lesbian people who would like to be married, who would like the same protections in this country as straight people in their relationships, or people who believe in science and want stem cell research to be commonplace, and hopefully the benefits of that will heal the sick? What's really more dangerous to this country? Narrow-minded, completely, you know, bordering on nationalistic, completely nationalistic, almost in some cases racist ideologues who want nothing but everybody to behave the same way with really no freedom whatsoever, either on a civil rights level or a practicing of religion level. I just don't know. I don't know what these people are thinking other than what Chris was talking about, which is that they're delusional. And obviously this that segment with Chris has caused some problems. We have a few callers, but before I get to our caller, I'd like to make sure you know that we've got Ariel Levy coming up, and that book is Female Chauvinist Pigs, Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture. This is an issue I've often wondered about, is how is porn empowering, or is it, given that it is in this culture, so dug in? It's almost on cereal boxes now. But let's deal with some of the religious backlash that I've caused. We apparently have a caller on the phone, the Reverend Lester Goodwill. Reverend, are you there, sir? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, Reverend Lester Goodwill, where are you calling from?
Calling from a compound in West Virginia.
A real compound?
It's compound-like.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I didn't have the full monetary opportunity to get the full-on compound. So it's a makeshift compound that's for people like me.
Now,
I don't need a whole lot.
Right. Now, what is...
I just need land.
Yeah.
A couple pages of paper.
Mm-hmm. And what
my dog. Hang on. I'm not done.
Okay.
The dog.
Yeah.
Just got back from a veterinarian. What else do I need? I guess water.
Yeah.
No. And I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I don't mean to sound fag, but sometimes I like sunshine.
Okay. Well, there's no crime in that.
And chocolate.
Yeah, okay. All right. Do you have a problem with some of the things I was saying about religion, or are you just calling to what?
No, I have a deep disregard for you, Mr.
Yeah.
Maron. I don't like... I have a problem with people who are anti-religious, anti-me, anti-my world, anti-my thoughts, anti-my utopia.
Uh-huh.
I find you getting in the way of my civil rights to be who I am.
Uh-huh.
See, now let me tell you something about that no one seems to bring up. Now, I can't speak for everybody because I don't watch the news.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because then I'm just filling my head with garbage.
Right. Okay.
So I don't know what y'all have been talking about, but I do know this.
Yeah.
When you talk about how it's okay for queers to get married,
yeah,
and they sign a piece of paper, and then the state comes in and says, "Hey, queers, guess what? Y'all's married."
Yeah.
And then that's equivocating with my marriage. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I've been married 6 times. Okay.
Yeah.
And each one of them has been more special than the other one, except for the third one. But that's a longer story.
But you don't see yourself as having a disrespect for marriage, given that you've been married 6 times.
No, sir. I have 6 times the respect.
And but yet you'd want to take that right away from a homosexual couple, a gay couple, to at least even experience one marriage. You want to take that right away from them?
Yeah, because here's the thing.
Yeah.
Now, there's an argument, okay, that I hear y'all always talking about up in New York and San Francisco.
Right.
Hey, well, what's wrong with a couple of Sallys getting together and having a binding contractual marriage, you know, where they're afforded the same rights as me, okay?
Yeah.
All right. And then the problem is, and they say, you'd never get affected by them. You wouldn't even know it. You wouldn't.
Yeah.
What does it matter if somebody 3,000 miles away gets to visit their homosexual lover in the hospital, okay?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what.
What?
I may not ever meet those people, and God willing, I never will. I'll never be in the same room with them. But guess what? I'm going to know. And when I'm out of my compound, and when I'm feeding Eichmann and running around with little Eichmann and, you know, getting her exercise and whatnot.
Wait, who's Eichmann?
My dog.
You
then,
got your dog Eichmann?
Yeah. And then I, Eichmann is man's best friend. Here's the thing.
What?
Then I know. How am I supposed to enjoy my day?
Right.
How am I supposed to enjoy the rest of my life?
The sunshine.
In God's country.
Yeah.
Knowing that. We went against the Bible. We went against God's word. When God sent down the golden calf, okay?
Yeah.
And then Jews took it the wrong way.
Yeah.
And then thought it was all about money.
Right.
Right? And they still do.
No.
Okay?
I
Have you seen how many golden calves? You go to New York City. It's filled with golden calves.
Yeah. I have been to New York City, and there was an art thing there where they had cows on every corner.
Well, you just said art.
Yeah,
they might as well say Jew fag.
Now wait a minute, sir. I'm not sure I can indulge you.
I don't enjoy art. I don't see a place for it.
To use that.
And in my world, in my utopia, there is no art. There's just the love of Jesus and God and what He said. And He said nothing about art. You go through the Bible.
Why do you have to use those words? What makes you feel good about using
language? I'm communicating an idea through English.
But you're using Jew as derogatory. You're using the word fag. No one uses the word fag and queer. What are you laughing about?
I'm not supposed to use the word Jew if it ain't derogatory. What am I supposed to say? Like, oh, this wonderful Jew helped me out. I mean,
Jesus was a Jew.
Well, that's still debatable.
No. I don't think it is if you're going to read the Bible literally. But
well, because I know there's that whole wiggle room thing where, you know, if you're birthed by the mama and the mama's Jew, then you's a Jew.
Yeah.
But if God's the father, God ain't no Jew. So he's half Jew at worst.
I've actually heard stories, and some people believe that Jesus may have been black.
I'm going to stop this phone call right now, Mr. Maron.
What do you mean? That's all it took? What are you going to do on the compound today?
Well, as I said, we're going to get Eichmann came back from a veterinarian. Yeah. We put a couple chips in her. We got a bunch of chips in her. And
chips,
then
computer chips.
Excuse me?
Computer chips?
Yep. How
do you feel that they might do that with people? You know that they're thinking about putting chips in our heads. How does that make you feel about
it? Well, they've already put a chip in some people's heads. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, like who? Like what do you mean?
Well, you know, I don't want to say nothing, but, it's going to get you all riled up, but Jews.
Now, what does that mean? So you're saying they're tagging Jews, that they're putting chips in our heads?
Well, if they got my letters, they are.
I'm a Jew. Do you know that?
Well, they don't do it so you know it. They do it in the middle of the night.
All right, so you're saying that there's special tax forces of people that come in the middle of the night and put chips in my head.
Yeah, don't think of it in the negative way. It's just in case you all get lost. Didn't you wander around for 40 years in the desert?
Yeah.
How do you wander around for 40 goddamn years in the desert?
Uh-huh.
40 years.
Uh-huh.
I could see like 4 months.
Right.
I mean, come on now.
All right, so the desert.
It would take me all but 2 years to, unless I was going in them little concentric circles outwardly, and then even then just walking about, I don't know, 20 feet a day,
right.
40
okay.
years. Come
right.
on now.
All right, so you're saying that the reason that Jews are being implanted with chips is so they don't
get lost. They get commonly
okay.
lost.
All right. Reverend Lester Goodwill, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I appreciate
that. I wish I could say the same, Mr. Maron. You have solidified everything I think about you.
Well, you don't seem to be a threat to society. You're just sitting around with your dog in the middle of nowhere in your shack. Who cares?
Are you calling the great Southland of America nowhere? Because if you are, then I'm proud to be an island of rectitude.
Okay, well, yeah,
you shall know my wrath, Mr. Maron.
Yeah, I can't wait. Take care, Reverend. Thanks for calling.
You don't take care. That's what I have to say to you. Gotcha. Last word.
Okay. What was that? What was that?
I don't know. I'm so surprised sometimes by
there's just
people
out
are.
There. They're just sitting alone with too much time on their hands, thinking the thoughts, ruminating, festering, making big cases for themselves, not being part of the club, get on board with the rest of the world, for God's sakes. Get on board with the rest of the country. Can't we start acting like a country that likes each other? I am so pissed off at Republicans for creating this schism, for making politics team sports, for letting people like him, like all the ditto heads who listen to Rush, just spout crap so they can feel like they're winning without ever taking into mind other people. That bothers me.
But, you know, he lives in a compound.
Yeah, it sounded like a very minimal compound. I think
sounds
he,
like fun, kind of. Yeah.
I think he was exaggerating, you know, whatever that compound was. Now, I want to, before we get out of here for this break, I want to say that I myself, though occasionally, find myself perusing what could be considered as pornographic images.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've never been a stripper guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go to strip clubs. I have. Maybe now that I'm in a relationship that is truly monogamous,
really?
and I'm honoring that perhaps I should reinvestigate the strip club. But before, when I was in a relationship that was not so monogamous, though it should have been, I found myself not needing strip clubs, obviously. But my issue is that I know that some women find stripper culture or to behave in – I don't want to – I'm minimizing it, not behave – but they are using pornography as a means to empowerment as opposed to what was once interpreted as a mode of objectification. And our guest, who's going to be here in a minute, will tell us how that happened and also clear up some stuff for me, hopefully. The author is Ariel Levy. The book is Female Chauvinist Pigs, Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture. She will be with us momentarily. I think I'll let the cat out of the bag. Reverend Lester Goodwill, who was just on the phone with us, was portrayed by David Cross, the comedian, who you can see now. His show, Freak Show, is now on Comedy Central, the animated show, with a bunch of other very talented comic writers and actors, Todd Barry, John Benjamin, John Glazer. But that's who that was. And please watch his show. It's funny stuff. We'll be back with Ari Levy. Stay with us. It's Marin on Springer.
Tradition. Conservatism. You know, the kind of crap our forefathers fought against. Progress with Jerry Springer on the radio. How's anybody going to hear if you don't say it? 877-345-3779. 877-34-JERRY. Springer on the radio.
Springer on Air America Radio.
All right, Mark Maron in for Springer. Good morning. It's a little. It's probably later in the morning. It's morning here, but late morning to you people out there on the Eastern Seaboard. I'm here with Jim Earle, and now I'm going to engage in one of my overly written long intros to a guest. I'm going to do an opening paragraph of an essay I'm writing. Here we go. A porn and stripper culture has been commodified, homogenized, and as common as sports in this country now. There was a time when the rallying cry of the feminist movement was against the objectification of women, of which porn is a primary example. Now things have been turned upside down, folks. Within the women's movement, there are movements to embrace porn and stripper culture and appropriating it as a mode of empowerment. I mean, how do these two ideas of what and where women's power and strength come from, conflict, and work together? With us is the author of Female Chauvinist Pigs, Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture, Ari Levy. Welcome to the show.
Much. Hi, Mark.
How are you?
I'm good. Do you remember that we had lunch once a few years ago?
I do. I remember we had lunch. I remember you've written nice things about me, and I like you.
Oh, great. That's off to a good start already.
That's why I sought you out. I saw you on the Colbert Show, and I said, hey, wait a minute. I know that lady.
Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's weird because this book is actually about something that I fester about, that I don't quite understand. I mean, I'm old enough. I'm old enough to have had relationships with both types of feminist thinkers, pre-raunch and pro-raunch.
Uh-huh.
Now, in historically, when did this schism really occur and how?
Well, it came to a head in the 80s during the so-called porn wars, when there were sort of two factions in the women's movement, the so-called pro-sex feminists who thought, you know, if feminism is about freedom, then women should be free to make or participate in or buy porn, and the, you know, anti-pornography feminists who thought that the point of the feminist movement was to elevate people's thinking about gender roles and sexuality and so forth, and that most porn, you know, made a mockery of that.
That most porn was just an objectification of women, something devoid of feeling or emotions or even respect.
Yeah, I mean, I think even more so, I mean, you know, most of the anti-porn feminists really, there was a slogan that was, you know, porn is the theory, rape is the practice. This woman, Robin Morgan, the same woman who came up with the personal is political, she came up with that slogan. And I think there were a lot of feminists who really thought that pornography was, as Susan Brownmiller put it, the essence of anti-female propaganda.
And also very difficult to get some women to watch.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably more your issue than theirs, but yeah.
Yeah. But now how things have shifted, because I know there was that school of thought, and I used to be pretty fascinated with people like Andrea Dworkin and people who saw any act of sex as an act of rape somehow. I thought it was extreme, but I appreciated their commitment, and it made me.
Well, here's the thing with Andrea, because she is fascinating. I actually just wrote the foreword to, they're re-releasing her most radical book, Intercourse, and I wrote the preface to that because she is just a fascinating character. Because the thing is, I mean, she wasn't entirely saying all sex is rape, but what she was saying was that in a sort of capitalist patriarchy, you know, it's like almost impossible to have any other kind of sex. And of course, here we are in the capitalist patriarchy. I mean, where else are we supposed to exist? So in essence, I mean, it does, you end up on all sex is rape there.
So you're saying that because of the nature of the way this society is structured, women have to surrender their bodies because men make all the bread?
No, I mean, I don't really think that. I mean, I think that at this point, you know, women have made an enormous amount of progress. So you know, men still make more to the dollar. But it's not the case that women are just totally powerless And that's why, you know, my book and my thing, the title of my book is Female Chauvinist Pigs. Obviously, it's a play on the idea, you know, if there used to be guys who treat women like pieces of meat, then I think there are plenty of women now who objectify themselves and objectify other women. And I just think that we can no longer say, like, oh, it's patriarchy, it's men's fault, because women have too much power. It's just no longer a logical way to look at things.
Okay, well, then let's assess that then. Why is that? I mean, I'm not saying that I necessarily have a problem with it, but I know there's a proliferation in terms of women who are willing to objectify themselves.
Yep.
And I can see where the power comes from to unleash that amount of a specific type of sexuality is sort of daunting. I don't know if it's empowering, but what do you think? Why do you think that so many women now, like with Girls Gone Wild and with amateur porn, are just willing to do this?
Well, let's start with, okay, so where it comes from. I mean, I think, you know, on some level, it's a generational rebellion. And I think, you know, nobody wants to turn into their mother. And whether your mother was a radical feminist or, you know, an evangelical Christian, either way, if you flash your boobs for Girls Gone Wild, you're going to bother her. So, I mean, I think there's you know, a generational rebellion.
Especially if you give her the gift set of Girls Gone Wild as a Christmas present.
There's no better Mother's Day present, really, is there? and I also think that, you know, we are, without a doubt, a culture that's, like, obsessed with immediate gratification. And, you know, you can see that in our sort of slavery to the bottom line in our environmental policy, you know, in the way we make all kinds of large choices.
Right.
And I think so the easiest way for a woman to get famous or to get a moment of attention, you know, is becoming sort of an amateur porn star.
All right, well, hold that thought. We're talking to Ariel Levy. We're talking about porn and feminism and a lot of different things. If you have a call, 877-34-JERRY, if you have a question for Ariel, we're going to talk to her a little more in just a couple of minutes. You can stay with us, right?
Yeah,
of course you can. So give us a call if you have a question, if you're a woman, if you want to pipe in on this, if you're a liberal progressive.
Our number is 877-34-JERRY. Call now.
Conversation at 1-877-34-JERRY. That's 1-877-345-3779.
Computer pornography continues to be the
hardcore pictures to look at and download.
Bitter adults surfing the internet can log on to any kind of pornography.
Surfing the internet.
Surfing the net.
Surfing the internet.
Cyber surfers.
If everybody had a keyboard and the technology, then their computer'd be surfing for some pornography. You'd see them looking for big boobs and crotches on display. The bushy, bushy blonde hairdos surfing TNA. You'll be downloading those pictures across the internet. We're gonna get our rocks off, then have a cigarette. All over the wide web, we're searching night and day. Everybody's gonna surfing TNA. We've got a great big hard disk and a computer chip, because it's so much safer than a relationship. All through the night we'll be looking for porno, straight and gay. In the ether we're surfing, surfing TNA. We're cruising through those phone lines and playing with our mouse. We lost our jobs and our families. We never leave the house. All over the country, we're searching night and day. Everybody's gone surfing, surfing TNA. Everybody's gone surfing, surfing TNA.
Jerry Springer on the radio.
All right, Mark Maron in for Jerry Singer. Jerry Springer. Jerry Singer. Who's Jerry Singer? Jerry Springer. I'm on the phone. Hey, Jim Earl's with me, by the way, as well.
Hey.
I'm on the phone with Ariel Levy. She's the author of Female Chauvinist Pigs, Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture. Ariel, I had an epiphany over the break.
Oh, my God.
Over the very long break. I had an epiphany
What happened to you?
Well, you know, I am married to a woman who is basically a pro-porn feminist to some degree. She's not afraid to look at porn when I'm not home. I mean, and i.e. use porn. She is not afraid to talk about it. And I think one of the reasons why this is empowering, if I'm not mistaken, is that you got to be quite a man to have to sort of deal with that. It's intimidating.
Well, let's back up for a second. First of all, I mean, I don't think the old categories of, like, pro-porn, anti-porn, I mean, I think we're sort of at a point where none of that is really relevant or applicable anymore. I mean,
right.
You know, that's come and gone. It's like porn is here.
There's no,
only a lunatic would say, oh, we're going to ban porn at this point. It's not going to happen. I think, though, that, you know, it's all well and good for porn or strip clubs or whatever to exist. And, you know, the idea that they sort of help people masturbate, that's one thing. But what I'm saying is, what my issue is when we see, you know, pornography being this supposed sort of educational touchstone for all of sexuality, you know, so that you have Jenna Jameson's memoir on the top of the bestseller list, and women are taking cardio striptease classes at the gym, and you have before the last Olympics, you know, several of the female American athletes pictured naked in Playboy or next naked in FHM, you know, that there's raunch culture in the subtitle of my book, because it's spread beyond like a sexual aid. It's become like a big cultural phenomenon. And my beef with that is that what happens is, you know, women walk around with porn star in their T-shirt imagining that they're going to learn, you know, they're going to learn about sex from porn stars or from strippers. These are women whose job it is to fake lust. So if we're imitating an imitation of female sexual pleasure and power, we're getting pretty removed from any authentic kind of, you know, liberation.
But so I imagine that in a lot of ways, men aren't necessarily complaining.
No, but I'm not that worried about men. You know, the point is, like, you can go ahead and enjoy your porn, and so can women. I just think that the idea that these are the experts, I think that that's messed up. I think that if we're going to, you know, have sexual role models as women, they should be the women who get the most pleasure from sex, not the women who get paid the most to do it.
Right. Well, that's interesting. And do you address the emotional connection, the idea that that sex requires an emotional connection and that's better sex?
Well, I think that's poppycock.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nonsense. And
I tend to think that too.
I think that, you know, sex is like a weird mystery. Like sometimes it's great with someone you love, and sometimes it's great with somebody you can't stand. I don't know why.
Or somebody you don't know. What about that one?
Or somebody you think is like icky.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a weird, mysterious thing.
It comes
from
a lot of different places. Yeah. Let's take a call real quick. Is Dan in Chicago still on the phone? Dan?
Hi. Good morning.
How are you?
Enjoy your show. Wanted to ask, isn't porn the lesser of two evils? Because in the countries where you don't have porn, women are treated far worse than in the countries you do have porn, which would also indicate that porn is an effect. It's not a cause. It's an effect of freedom.
Huh. That's interesting. Thanks for your call, Dan. What are you going to do with that, Ariel? We lost Ariel? Oh. Well,
I'll answer that question.
Okay. What do you got, Jim?
In countries like Holland, for instance.
Yeah.
I agree. His point is well taken. Holland, there's a free and easy attitude towards sex. In fact, sex is almost the human body is looked upon as not something for sex. Really, they're kind of bored with sex over there right now in the human body. And they have these sex shows, and I haven't been to any, but I know for a fact that these sex shows are more humorous than they are.
Well, you can
sexy,
see
you know?
See that on international TV. I think what he's saying is that when there is a proliferation of porn, or when porn is commonplace, that women or that men actually see women differently. It sort of counteracts you. She's back.
I got cut off. I don't know what happened.
Did you hear that guy's question?
No, because I was cut off.
Basically, he's saying that the effect that porn has on a country that there is a proliferation of porn is that there's actually less violence towards women as opposed to in countries where there is no porn, that it's somewhat there's an effect of porn that perhaps demystifies I don't know what.
No, that's a false causality. I mean, in societies where there's more freedom, you know, you have a better situation. You know, I mean, it's not because we have porn that there's less violence towards women. It's because we don't allow genital mutilation and we have some protection for reproductive freedom and women are allowed to have checking accounts. I mean, that's a ridiculous assertion, I think.
I was all ready to change the flag to a giant vagina or something. Is that a real laugh? Ariel, you want to stay on the phone?
Yeah, okay. If I can. I got cut off. I don't know how it happened.
All right. Well, we're going to take a couple more calls if there's people that still want to talk to you. I want to talk to you still because I like you. 877-34-JERRY is our number. The book is Female Chauvinist Pigs, Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture. We'll talk to Ariel Levy more in just a second.
Send Jerry an email to Jerry@SpringerOnTheRadio.com. Talk to Jerry Springer on the radio.
Hey, Jerry!
On your telephone.
Oh.
Call 877-345-3779. That's 877-34-JERRY.
Springer on Air America Radio.
All right, Mark Maron here in for Springer. Jim Earls over there on the phone. Ariel Levy, the book Female Chauvinist Pigs, Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture. So let me just make sure I understand what we're talking about, Ariel, is that the issue is not so much porn or no porn or pro porn or this porn. It's that porn has somehow infused itself into every area of culture that even women who should be recognized for something other than that are being tagged with it or surrendering to it to bolster their image on some level.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that it's not just women, it's girls, too. I mean, there's like when you go, I did a lot of interviews with teenage girls for this book, and like a lot of them, you know, before they're even, not only before they're having sex, before they're even really having thoughts about sex, where they're even feeling sexual, they already will tell you, like, well, the one way we all compete is to see who can look the skankiest. It's like, you know, they're already sort of involved in, like, trying to look like porn stars before they're even thinking about sex. And that's a good example of how it's, like, all about performance and not about pleasure. Like, it's not like they're expressing their sexual desires. They don't even have desires yet. And they're already like, how do I look like a porn star?
So you're saying the real argument is that porn, it's not even an argument, but the statement that we're making is that porn is here to stay. It's part of every element of culture,
yeah.
The sexualization that comes from porn, but it may be getting in the way of the woman's true talents and truly what they should be recognized for out in the world.
Or even just women having sex the way they want to. I mean, I think that, like, if there's too much energy for women on, like, okay, how do I, you know, get my, like, vagina waxed like a porn star's and have breast implants like porn star's and look like a porn star and sort of be porny while I'm having sex, not enough time spent thinking about what do I want to have? What do I want in my sex life? What's pleasurable for me?
Right,
like, it shouldn't all be a show, you know?
No, it should only be a show at the beginning just to get things going. But porny, I like the word porny. Let's talk. Let's take a call from Bill in Joliet, Illinois. Bill.
Hi. Good morning. I'm just driving, and I listening to the discussion. I think that automatic brush off of the correlation between societal acceptance of sex via pornography and the treatment of women, I think she brushed it off too quickly. I would like to know the sociological evidence or the evidence or whatever. I mean, why brush off that correlation? I'm not sure it's a false correlation. True correlation is not causation, but I would like to know the scientific evidence why the correlation was brushed off summarily.
You mean okay, go ahead, Ariel.
The correlation, we agree. The correlation wasn't brushed off. The causation was. I think you're right that in societies that, you know, have more freedom, there tends to be more room for pornography to exist. But pornography existing doesn't make it so women have a better shot in society. They happen to go along together. So we don't actually disagree. I think you don't know what causation means.
So are you saying it's the underlying culture that reflects the pornography that then demonstrates itself in the acceptance of women, that in fact is the correlation, and that it's just an intermediate variable then? Is that I want to make sure I understand.
Wow, this is getting dense.
What the hell? That was beyond me.
Thank you, Bill. I was getting a little tied in knots there myself, Ariel.
Wow.
I want to read his book.
Yeah, well, I would like to read his book. It's called The Correlation, the Causation, and the Intermatrix of the Vexing.
He was like a stone professor.
I think he was. He had a nugget stuck in his brain, and
he's got a nugget.
Yeah, he's got a nugget going. So I appreciate you being on the show, and I wish you the best of success with the book.
Thanks, dude.
So how is it doing? Are people responding?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's sort of like a bigger deal than I thought it would be, because I guess people are actually like interested in this topic.
Are you going to tell me that you had no idea that if you put raunch culture, female chauvinist pigs, and porn anywhere on a book jacket that you're just surprised that people might gravitate towards it?
Well, I mean, it doesn't say porn. It just says raunch culture, which, let's face it, is like a made-up term. So, I mean, you know, it's like...
Did you make it up?
Yeah, it's make-believe. I made it up.
Did you make up porny? I like porny.
I don't know. Somebody else probably thought of porny before.
Acting porny?
Yeah. I don't know if I can take credit for that. Sparkle of that nugget of genius.
Well, it's great to talk to you, and
you too.
I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Okay, bye, Mark.
Bye, bye. That was Ariel Levy. The book is Female Chauvinist Pigs: Women and the Rise of Raunch Culture, which is really the causation of the correlation that we were trying to get at initially in terms of freedom. We'll be back. Why don't we come back? I think we might have time for a little nugget from a Mark and Jim nugget from the Mark Maron Show. Stay with us. You're listening to Mark Maron, the Jerry Springer Show.
Jerry Springer is doing a fine job
on the radio.
Get right through. Email jerry@springeronthe.com.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Do we have a thing? Yeah, we got the
environmental news.
Yeah, do we have an environmental news?
We got one. I think we're going to put it in the cart right now. And now it's time for this week's disturbing environmental news that'll frighten you, but not enough to really do anything about it. Brought to you by
Ortho Snail and Slug Pellets. Hi, I'm Mark Maron, and if you're like me, you like to keep a tidy backyard. And if you're really like me, you like to kill everything that comes within 6 feet of your garden. That's why I use Ortho Snail and Slug Pellets. Ortho Snail and Slug Pellets will keep your garden safe. And by safe, I mean free of any worldly imperfections. Just like it was in the Garden of Eden when Jesus first had sex with Judas, or whoever the hell that was. Anyway, scientists agree our cocktail of poison chemicals will keep working long after your marriage falls apart and you've stopped caring about that crappy clump of nasturtiums you planted for that bitch. In fact, it'll last for decades, slowly sinking into the soil, into water tables, and ultimately emptying onto your local beach. That's why you'll never see a banana slug in Malibu, unless Ernest Borgnine drops his swim trunks. But how can you tell it's working, you ask? Well, for one thing, your neighbor's dog will start twitching and foam will come out of his ear holes. Other companies might charge extra for that service, but not Ortho. And now, back to this week's disturbing environmental news.
Due to government inaction on overfishing, countless species of sea creatures face extinction. At least 100 tons of uncollected oil from the Exxon Valdez is still killing Alaskan wildlife. And as expected, today another 200,000 acres of rainforest were obliterated to help stuff your fat, obtuse faces with hamburgers and steaks. Eat well, barbarians. And that was this week's disturbing environmental news that'll frighten you, but not enough to really do anything about it. Brought to you by
Ortho Snail and Slug Pellets. Mmm. Tastes like kibble. All right,
And you've been eating snail pellets?
You know, I'm hungry, I'm snacking. It was the only thing they had in the machine.
You got to control yourself.
What did they put them in the machine for? You could think of a vending machine, and I thought it would be kind of interesting.
Don't blame industry.
Oh, the ghost of a dead possum is haunting my dreams. It's haunting my house.
Poor Herbie.
I wish, he's nobody's pet. He's nobody. Yeah, my, you know, someone else saw
him. I didn't have a bow on his, around his neck.
So they're seeing coyotes in my neighborhood again. I got the four cats, and that freaks me out, too. The ways of the wild. But I've got this idea that I rescued those cats from a garbage can in Queens, and two of them made it to Highland Park, and they're out in the wild, out in the hills, enjoying life. If they go out by a coyote, taking them down, shredding them, ripping them apart, they had quite a life. And that might be the way. That might be the honorable way to go out instead of some sort of weird cat food induced cancer in a, you know, in a body that's lived, outlived itself. But look, folks, I've had a great time. Jim, did you have a good time?
Oh, yeah.
Jerry will be back, I think, Tuesday. I will be on Letterman Monday night, as will Jerry. But he'll be, his will actually air Monday night, I think, and mine's going to air on Friday. You can go to myspace.com/Marin if you want to see where I'm playing. And markmarin.com as well. We'll put you there, and also you can get some CDs. Don't want to sell my stuff, but Franken does it. Maybe I'll sell a couple CDs. Nice to see you, Jim. Have a good day, people.
This is Springer on the radio.
Here's Olympic gold.